The first question has to do with what in the world happened to the dinosaurs. In order to answer this question, I think it's important we put it in the proper context of a primitive Earth. The answer will require several steps. Number one, we have the planet Earth, and we have basically one landmass. At the moment, I still feel there seems to be good indication of the theory of the drifting of the continents. If you put South America up against North America, they fit. And you push North America over, bring in Australia, you bring in all these things, and you end up with one landmass. Now, this is very convenient for the Christian theologian because Noah, of course, brought in two of every species into the ark. Now, one of the har-hars of the heathen is, how did he get them out of Australia? How did he get the kangaroos? How did he get the tapirs from Brazil? And the heathen go, har, 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 har. The quick answer is there was only one landmass. And this was the one landmass that was deluged with the flood, and thus it was perfectly all right for Noah to have two of every species from that landmass. Now remember, it's two of every species, not of subspecies. So it's not two collies and two German shepherds and two Irish setters, two dogs, period. Two puppies. And then two tiger kittens and two baby elephants and two baby this and two baby that, including two baby Trisonosaurus rexes. And you pat them on the head. Two brontosauruses, and you pat them on the head. And the rest of the clan that were all there that couldn't survive water. You go back to the primitive Earth, and you have the following things. One, as I said, one landmass. Number two, you have an extensive ring, much more than what Saturn does. Now again, Christian theologians, particularly a man by the name of Rivinkel, a Lutheran scholar, for years has said that there was a canopy of ice crystals. And when the flood happened, there was a collapse of this canopy. And when the ice crystals came into the atmosphere, they melted, they were vaporized, and the condensation, the clouds, the rain, you have the flood. Now everybody went, this guy's out of it, till they discovered that Saturn is ringed with clumps of ice, H2O. Now there are all those people, even in the Creation Research magazine, years ago that wrote in, saying, Rivinkel's theory is not true because given the weight of these ice crystals, there is no way that they could maintain themselves in orbit without crashing down. Well, now we have found ice crystals, and maybe some of the moons of Saturn are balls of pure ice. Not an iron center, pure ice. Well, if chunks of ice can circle around Saturn, then chunks of ice could have circled around the Earth. There's also some evidence that Jupiter has had a ring, and there seems to be some remnants of it, so it may have collapsed. They don't have enough evidence yet, except that there seems to be a ring around Jupiter as well. If you take into your equation that there was indeed this ring, now the ring is not a thin band, but let's say it covered the whole sphere, and the Earth was... Basically, you had these sort of an ice-like canopy of these ice meteors, if you want to put it that way. That would explain many things. For example, if you have that canopy, cosmic rays cannot come in. And cosmic rays are the key to aging. So they tell women, don't lie out in the sun because you'll age faster. The wrinkles. Why? The cosmic rays do it. They even think it affects the genetic code. And that's why we have racial distinctions. So those living near the equator have a darker skin than those living further north. Well, nevertheless, it is clear that cosmic rays do cellular damage. And they do indeed affect the biological lifetime clock within species. Now, we find... First of all, that people before the flood lived to great lengths of time. How many of you have ever wondered? You read in there, somebody lived 1,200 years, somebody lived 900 years, 600 years. You know, you look at this and you say, wow, you know. They must have had long mortgages in those days. Imagine, your mortgage is the next 500 years, you know, payments. Well, people used to go har, 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 har until they found out the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Aztecs, there is across this planet in all these other cultures, primitive civilizations, the story that their original descendants lived to great length. Now, they were a little longer, like the Egyptians claim some of their pharaohs lived 14, 15,000 years. But you have universally within the collective memory of mankind the fact that originally life was not cut short at 70, 80 years old. There was a great length of time. They may have called it 15,000. Some of the Babylonians talked about 1,000,000 years, 1,000 years, things of that nature, where they really spoke in terms of how old their rulers supposedly were. Well, if there was this canopy, the heavy cloud cover like something you have on Venus, you would, one, cut out the cosmic rays, and you would not have the aging process. That would explain people. Number two, reptiles continue to grow as long as they live. There is no biological cutoff date for the growth of reptiles. So, given enough time within this ecological situation, the biggest crocodile ever shot was 28 feet long, and it was a man-eater in Philippines. Used to have the women who went down to wash and used to grab the kids. 28 feet long. I think it was like 1.5 tons. Swallowed you whole. Well, they figured this guy was really old. They've got some alligators down in Florida in these alligator farms they think are 100 years old. Well, reptiles don't stop growing. You ever go see a tortoise, a giant, one of these, a sea turtle? They don't stop growing. Give an alligator 500 years. How big would that thing be? You would have your dinosaurs. These little lizards on the Komako, whatever they are out there near Japan, 9 feet long. Give them 500 years. How long would those lizards be? Shades of Godzilla, right? Give the snakes 500 years, and what are you going to have? Not any 20, 30, 40 feet pythons. You're going to have 100 feet long. You're going to really have some big mothers. Now, what are you going to do? Well, the canopy would explain. You see, the dinosaurs were simply overgrown species of reptiles which grow as long as they live. And if they live to be 500, they live to be 1,000 years old, you're going to have monsters. You're going to have it. Thirdly, you'll have a hothouse effect, and the vegetation across the entire planet is going to be lush. So they dug up in the North Pole, and guess what they brought up out of the drill? Banana leaves. Now, how did banana leaves get a mile below the ice in the North Pole? Well, everybody now recognizes there was at one time, evidently, if you take the drifting of the continents, the whole thing was one lush tropical paradise. A lot of vegetation. How else could you support such things as the brontosaurus, or which is even bigger, the megasaurus, which made the brontosaurus look like peanuts? This guy was unbelievable. And they ate tons of vegetation. Not a few wheelbarrow loads. They ate tons. Well, in order to maintain the vegetation, you have to have a hothouse, a greenhouse effect. So you have it. It affects the age of man. It affects the size of reptiles. It affects the vegetation and supports many varied species and variant life forms. Okay? Everyone up to this point. When the flood happened, God caused the ring or the canopy to collapse. And there was the deluge. The windows of heaven were open. Ravinkel goes into this. And you have the water pouring in. If the rings of Saturn collapsed, you would have a flood on Saturn. Noah did have two of every young, Trisonosaurus, Brontosaurus, two of every species that God brought to the ark. After the flood, they go forth, question, with the canopy gone, would you expect that the lifetime of people, the age of people, would be drastically shortened? Well, that would only logically follow. And what does the biblical record show? Cut down to 120. Cut down to 90. Bang! like that. Number two, without the canopy, would the limit of age growth for reptiles be also cut down? Bang, that would also be cut down. Three, without the canopy, would there be the less vegetation to support the brontosauruses and the megalosauruses, and then the huge flesh eaters, the plesiosaurus and Trisonosaurus rex and all the rest of them? You're going to have a different world that Noah and the animals were kicked out of. A world that was scaled down. Then later on in Genesis, you have mentioned these are the days in which the earth was divided. And the scholars are really fighting about that verse. Those who believed in the drifting of the continent say the Hebrew says this is the time in which the landmass split. That's what the Hebrew says. And then those who don't believe it say, oh, well, it just means an earthquake. That's all. Something of that nature. Well, regardless of how you deal with it, if there was indeed South America went over here, North America went over here, Australia over here, Africa, and of course some portions of them ultimately sank in the ocean, like Atlantis. If there was an Atlantis, it sunk. If it is outside of Bermuda, if you ever want to go scuba diving, you can go out there scuba diving. They'll take you way out, and at the bottom of the ocean is a complete civilization built in stone, huge stone walls. Nobody knows whoever built it, but whoever built it don't live there anymore because it's way down deep and you got to have scuba equipment to get it to it. Questions, who built it? They're massive. They weren't primitive people. Who was this continent, this island, or what was it that sunk? Who knows? Maybe it was Atlantis or Mur or whatever it was. The dinosaurs simply died out because the ecological system had been so altered by the collapse of the canopy that the earth could no longer support such huge life forms. Now, there can be, indeed, some remnants of it left. Again, human memory. All civilizations speak of dragons, speak of giant lizards, and tell stories of people fighting them. You know, the Chinese with their dragons, the Europeans with the fiery dragon, St. George. It's collective. Where did it come from? It came from the fact that after the Trisonosaurus rex and the other ones had to eat something, and when they ran out of Brontoburgers, they started looking at the little life forms, namely man, that was around. So you have in the collective memory of mankind, in virtually every civilization, the legend of these giant dinosaurs and having to fight them. Well, they were there. They really were there. They've died out. Maybe there's a couple of the plesiosaurs left in Loch Ness, and maybe there's some left in the Congo. There's a Christian group that went out there that took a picture. It was on That's Incredible, and they said they have actually found the plesiosaurs. So the dinosaurs do live in certain situations where it is ecologically sound for them to do so. Well, that then would explain what happened to the dinosaurs. The ecology system simply made it impossible for them to survive, either the vegetarian or the meat eaters. Any questions? All right, let's go to the next question then. Yes, Vern.
Okay, you just said that they couldn't possibly live long enough to get to it. And you said now there's a possibility that some of them still exist.
Oh, yeah, but these are small. The plesiosaurus that's been talked about in Loch Ness and in Congo, they're peanuts. They're not like the huge ones. You go to the Natural Museum of History. These are smaller versions. See, like, you know, you can just think the mammoths versus the elephant. Obviously, the elephant probably is a descendant of the mammoths, but there's no comparison. You go see these mammoths in the Museum of History. Wow! You know, they bring one of these little elephants. That's one of the babies. Look at, you ever seen the size of a saber-toothed tiger as opposed to regular tigers? Now, they're different species, but there's no comparison. Or the giant sloths, the giant bears. Everything has been scaled down in the ocean. How many of you have seen the picture of the jawbones of the great prehistoric sharks that used to roam the ocean? And what is the guy doing? He's sitting in the mouth, and the thing would reach all the way up to the ceiling, go all the way down here. It's a giant white, the great white from the prehistoric times. They had huge things. The ecology can no longer support that kind of creature. So with the cosmic rays, the lifetime is shortened, and the ecology does not simply allow for it to grow to that great length. Jeff?
I guess two questions. Now, first of all, how old would you say the universe is? And second of all, how does the carbon-14 part of saying we go back millions and millions and millions of years fit in?
First question is, how old is the Earth? The second question is, what about carbon-14 dating and other dating methods that are used by evolutionists to explain that the Earth is of great age? Probably the most popular evolutionist answer is that the Earth is 5 billion years old. How long has man been on the planet? Leakey says 3 million. Other evolutionists only say 1 million. What does a Christian have to say to this? Well, again, you have to make room for those Christians who care to disagree. So Walter Martin says the Earth is 5 billion years old, and that's how old it is. And he does not want any further discussion on the subject. Others care to differ from him. Francis Schaeffer says the word day, yom in the Hebrew, can mean age. So it says 7 days, so what? It could mean 7 ages. Like an immense amount of time. Problem is, Schaeffer's not a Hebrew scholar, and he doesn't realize that the Hebrew word yom, whenever it's preceded by a numeral, always means a literal day, not an age. Never, ever in Hebrew literature. Period. So he's got a problem there too. I personally feel that there seems to be enough evidence to warrant that the Earth is anywhere 10,000 years, 15,000 years, somewhere in that ballpark. We don't have to follow the genealogies, and with Usher, it was an Irish theologian by the name of Usher, who took all the genealogies and added up the number of years of each person. Now he's assuming that each is in proper line, and each one succeeds the other, and came up to 4004 BC, August 5th at 3:30 in the afternoon. That's when he came up with, okay? I think he makes a mistake because the genealogies are not exhaustive. The genealogies skip over the black sheep of the family. The genealogy sometimes are grandfather and great-grandson. The genealogies are not meant to determine time, but they're to give an overview within the context of God's people, the development within Israel, which does not give us, really, an indication of the age of the earth per se, though population studies do indicate that if we take the rate at which human beings multiply, and then we project into the past how many years the evolutionists say that people have been around, we should be up to the moon in people bodies. Where are all the people? Well, they said there were wars and rumors of war. So they said, well, we will take the population studies of the Jewish race, given the Holocaust, given the wars, given the persecution. Now, they probably, more than any other people, have had a rough time, right? Well, if we take their birth rate and project that for the whole human race, we're still up to the moon in people bodies. Where are all the people? If you project it the other way, you're talking 10,000, 12,000 years. To explain the population of the planet Earth now on the basis of regular birth growths as we observe them. Now, of course, the creationist brings in the flood and how that cut down drastically, and we have to start from Noah and the 8 people in the ark. And we bring in some more figures, which the evolutionists wouldn't. I have the pamphlet. I guess you would have it, if not, but the age of the Earth. The division is simply this. It is now possible to rig or to set up methods of dating subjectively so that you end up with what you want and where you started. Now, this is the great problem we all face. If you don't take the most obvious ways of dating, for example, erosion rates, topsoil erodes, and you say, well, I don't want to take erosion rates. I don't want to take this. I'll take meteor dust. According to Isaac Asimov, how many of you know Isaac Asimov, the science fiction writer? In Science Digest, over 14 tons of meteor dust fall in the atmosphere every year. There should be 54, feet of meteor dust outside your window. Where is it? Now, he's an evolutionist, and he says, given 5 billion years, we don't have it. Where's all the meteor dust? Now, he says, well, it just became Earth's crust. Well, that doesn't work because meteor dust is 2.5 nickel content. Very high in nickel. Very high in iron. Earth's crust is 0.0003 nickel. That doesn't work out. The meteor dust does not become the Earth's crust and somehow magically all the nickel disappear. So the creationists have simply said that there are dating methods which do show a young Earth. The evolutionists say, well, we cannot accept those dating methods. Why? Because they would end up with an Earth too young. I heard this on Channel 33 with my own ears. It was a special on mountains. And if you see the special on mountains, it started out, talk about mountains, how they're pushed up and flattened down and erosion rates. And it says, we used to measure the age of mountains on the basis of erosion rates. But that method would lead to too young of an Earth. Therefore, we know that method can't be right because they have to be there billions of years. And this way of testing shows only thousands. Therefore, we must say that the method is somehow an error. Now, the creationist works the other way. And the creationist says, well, what do you say? And the evolutionist says, well, this rock is 3 billion years old. How do you know it's that old? Because of the fossils that are in it. Well, how old are the fossils? 3 billion years old. Well, how do you know that? Because of the age of the rock. In a paper I wrote, this is actually stated in the Encyclopedia Britannica, that the evolutionists are here arguing in a circle. They date the rock according to the fossils, having dated the fossils according to the rock. Now, at the moment, that's what they do. If you begin with the assumption, the more simple, the older, the more complex, the younger, then they find this stone, it has a very complicated species. Oh, well, that's a late. They don't have any evidence, you see. Well, what about the small attempts they have had? Well, one, carbon-14 dating. That works only about 10,000 years. That's as most as you can get out of that dating method. Matter of fact, even then, it's a problem. They took live mollusks, and they ended up, these mollusks were like 12,000 years old or something like that, and there they were sitting. They took wood out of a house that burned down, and the house would be 10,000 years old. It was burned down yesterday. All sorts of things affect that. Other person says, what about uranium and the half-life? Well, now we know that uranium is affected. Its half-life can be hastened. That's what fission and fusion is all about. And cosmic rays may do with that. You end up with the evolutionist saying, I will not accept as valid any method of dating that ends up in the creationist ballpark. There's got to be something wrong with it. The creationist says, I will not accept as valid any method of dating that the evolutionists find, because something has to be wrong with that too. Now, having said that, you do have to go one strata deeper and say, in the end, there is no such thing as brute facts. No one is neutral or objective. All of us approach so-called facts with presuppositions and with a context. So an evolutionist comes over here, Harry comes over and says, see that tree out there? What's that tree? And he looks at an evolution chance-produced tree. And I say, I don't see that. I see a God-planned, created tree. Now, how many trees do we have? One tree, but how many interpretations? How many worldviews? How many two ways of looking at it? Now, I think the Christian system is going to be verifying that having said that everyone comes with a different view does not mean that all views are the same. And pay your nickel and take your choice. No, there are tests for validity. The evolutionist is collapsing today because, one, Darwin is absurd. Most Christians are still fighting Darwin when people in Harvard are not talking about Darwin anymore. Darwin said that we once had tails. Guess what happened to the tails according to Darwin? We sat on them and wore them away. Now, when Darwin was running around in the Beagle, had he ever heard of Mendel and his experiment with the peas and finding about DNA and chromosomes? Never in his lifetime. Darwin had his evolution work by acquired characteristics. You learn to swing from a branch, and supposedly your babies picked it up from you. Now, genetics has destroyed that. Mendel took 14 rats, was it, cut off their tails, and then they let the rats breed, and guess what happened? Guess what those babies were born with? Cut off tails? No! Acquired characteristics are not transmitted through the gene pool. It doesn't matter that you learn to do a bow. That will not help your kid. You may teach him, but it's not an acquired characteristic. So Darwinian evolution is dead. Now they talk about what the term, a mutation, that's it. They talk about genetic mutations. And that doesn't work out because mutations are 99.9999% harmful, not helpful. A kid's born with the hair lip, the kid's born with his heart outside, with no feet or 6 feet or whatever it is, it's not helpful. It's harmful. So you have a guy by the name of Gould who now says that evolution was not a steady progressive thing, but evolution came in spurts for unknown reasons. Just all of a sudden, an elephant gave birth to a giraffe, and nobody knows why. And it just so happened that another elephant within the same vicinity gave birth to a female giraffe. And the two giraffes somehow by chance got together and they didn't produce elephants. Well, you end up with more fallacious thinking, you see. It just simply doesn't work. I think the creationist has a good grounds to stand upon. And I think the evidence is accumulating in that direction. Though the humanists will never accept it because of the moral consequences. Yes?
One thing that you and Dr. Schaefer point out is that when you're talking to an evolutionist and they're going along with these theories, you can shake their hand and say that, you know, you're a testament to faith because of your deep faith, you know, and now I can move out my faith because we're both living.
Some of the evolutionists have, as a matter of fact, admitted that they have a great faith. And it is faith in a process that is not going on today. Who sees an elephant give birth to a giraffe? This is the evolutionists have a great problem. Where do we see in nature evolution going on now? We don't see it. The only place that new species have appeared is where? In the laboratory. Man tinkering with the genetic code. Intelligence working on life to produce new kinds of life. Order and harmony. That is not the same as out in the boonies, zoomies. So you can't take a lab situation and say, well, that's like wild, chaotic nature. That doesn't work. We believe God created species and there was an intelligence at work. So it's a great problem they face. It simply won't work. Polanyi, a mathematician who is not a Christian, said that it is more probable. Let's say you're driving into Wales, he said, in the train, and you see on the mountainside in white stones, "Welcome to Wales," on the mountainside. This is his illustration. He's not a Christian. He said, what is the probability of those stones rolling out of the dirt by themselves? And what is the probability of birds or whatever it is making them white? And what is the probability of birds or whatever it is making them white? And what is the probability that by chance they roll together to form the words "Welcome to Wales"? Then he gives it to you. He says, it is more probable for that to happen than for evolution to be true. He said, that is what we're talking about. And this people who are into statistical studies, they are the ones before the creationists. This is in the 50s and the 60s. They were raising questions about the theory of evolution, and they were not even Christians. So I think that there needs to be some thought here. And I think we have ammunition from such people. Another question. Yes, Vern.
What unit of time did, say, before the flood, what unit of time did they use? They said, like, Methuselah lived 932 years. Well, what was their unit of time for a year? Was it 365 days? Or?
Question, how did they measure time before the flood and after the flood? The scriptures do not give one consistent way of measuring time. That is a very cultural and very relative method. Some civilizations did it strictly on the basis of the moon. Others had a year, but of varying different kinds of days. Others marked it in terms of knots or in terms of a wheel. There were all sorts of different ways. For example, in the New Testament, it says in one gospel, which is speaking Hebrew time, says 3 o'clock. Another gospel speaking of the same incident says 6 o'clock. Now the har-hars come in. Hey, the Bible contradicts itself. Over here it says 3 o'clock, and over here it says 6 o'clock. Well, one is Hebrew time and one is Roman time. And you find the New Testament includes both. In terms of before the flood, no one, of course, survives to tell us. Same thing with what a cubic meant. How long was the ark? It was so many cubics. Well, how long was a cubic? Well, we're not quite sure. That their year would be basically following the phases of the moon and have the seasons, and it would be one complete cycle of spring, let's say, spring, summer, fall, winter. That would be one unit. Your civilizations basically follow a year there.
Did they have seasons?
Well, with the canopy, I guess they wouldn't have seasons. I really don't know.
That was a question.
Yeah, that was a good question. I really don't know.
932 years.
Now that's Moses, though. So here's the thing.
And so how do you know he lived that many years? Maybe a year was 100 days of the time.
Well, here's the difference. If these records were written while Methuselah was alive, or were pre-deluge, pre-antiluvian records, then we could scratch our heads and say we don't have a clue as to what they were talking about. But these records were written by Moses when a day was a day, and a night was a night, and a year was a year. And there was a way of Hebrew reckoning. And when Moses wrote in order to explain to his people how old Methuselah was, he was speaking in terms they could understand. So when he said that guy was 600 years old, the average Jew would say he's 960 years old. He used the words which at that time would indicate to them the lifespan. So it really, in one sense, doesn't bother me that we don't have any antediluvian records or anything left from that civilization, because we have Moses through inspiration looking back and interpreting for us and telling us what went on. So we know how long they lived on the basis of what Moses said. Yes?
The period in time called the Ice Age, did that occur immediately after the canopy fell and there was a pulling of the poles? And
question, what about the Ice Age? The Ice Age was invented by the humanists when the flood people brought forth so much evidence to show that massive amounts of earth had been moved and there had been extreme chaotic conditions on earth. For years, your non-Christians said, we don't believe in the flood. What is has always been. The name of the guy, Larkinism or something like that. It was a geologist, and he said, what you see now has always been. So he denied the flood. He denied any catastrophes whatsoever. That is the basis of humanist thought. What is, has always been, will always will be, so there's no difference. We're not going anywhere, we're not coming from anywhere, and we're not on our way to any goal. Well, when the evidence accumulated, and they found huge deposits of fossils in one big place, or they saw obviously that some fantastic force had come and scraped everything off. What they scraped, they had to come up with some idea. They ran across the mastodons in Siberia, frozen with the stuff in their mouth and things of that nature. Well, how could they explain it? Well, they could go to the flood, and the flood would explain it, because the mastodons were overcome with water and frozen. Well, how could that be? Where would the water come? It's not slow ice. A mastodon gets out of the way of a glacier. He wasn't standing there till he got surrounded and boxed in. So you see, the glacial theory does not explain the frozen mastodons. It doesn't explain these things. A flood does. If you had one landmass and you had water pouring down like this and washing into the sea, then you would have things like Grand Canyons and things of that nature which are caused by erosion. You would have mass movements. You would have crushing. You would have all sorts of things. So that you have, in the Creationist Research Bulletin, you have a topographical study of a section of Canada, which is fascinating, that now taken from satellite, we can see things now via satellite we couldn't see before. The whole part there is one of ripples like you see at the beach. You ever been at the beach and see left in the sand the ripple mark? The whole part of Canada is ripples, one after the other. So, of course, they went to the evolutionists and said, what about it? And they said, well, they certainly look like ripples, but they can't be ripples. Why? Because that would have to be a lot of water there to have ripples. Yeah? And that never happened. It didn't. It would be the glacial age. Yeah, but you don't have ripples with glaciers. What do you have? Scraping and mountain and things of that nature. You don't have the ripples. So here's the topographical study of the ripples. So your creationists have come to this conclusion. One, there was the deluge of the flood. Two, the continent split. Three, there was some drastic catastrophes that happened. Who knows? A comet, a meteor, we don't know. That caused a sudden freezing at both ends of the pole. And you have the mastodons trapped. Glaciers cannot explain that. You have to explain it on grounds of something else. Most of them explain it post-flood. It's a result of the flood, but it is not something that happened at the time of the flood.
Scientifically, do they say that glaciers form slowly, and they moved out slowly through formation?
Those who believe in the Ice Age, do they say that glaciers form slowly? Yeah. And see, which creates immense problems for them. Animals are going to move. I mean, they're not. I mean, you can't have what they say happen unless you have a flood. Was another question. I'll come back to you. Yes, Barry.
Even with fossils, they've never found a fossil that has evolved. In other words, if you have a fossil, like you say, a tiger, you never find that link in between. All fossils are complete.
Question, why is it the fact that these evolutionists have never come up with the missing link? Now, one, they have come up with missing links, but they were all frauds. The Piltdown Man was a beautiful example of staining and grinding and making a missing link when they needed one. Or they talk about the Peking Man, and no one has a shred of bone of the Peking Man, but they go on and talk about it. Or another one, I call him Picky, because he was one tooth, and they built the whole race till they found it was the tooth of a pig. But they have tried to come up with them, but in fact, they've never found them. This is where this guy Gould come in and says, we never will. There isn't a transition from one to the other. It just was a sudden burst of a fluke that happened. So they'll never find the missing links. Yes?
The reason I asked about that glacier thing, I have a friend who I was relating the creation view of the mastodon like that. And he felt that, well, the glacier age explained that. And I wasn't aware at the time that glaciers didn't just form.
No, then we have questions. Glaciers are slow moving. Yeah, there are glaciers now. You can go up to Alaska. They move an inch a year, something of that nature. Even if they moved a few inches, you can't have the situation where, like the mastodons and others, were frozen solid in a large deluge of water. They were obviously caught in a flood and then flash frozen. How that can happen, I'm not sure. The collapse of the canopy. There's many theories about what type of catastrophe would result in flash freezing. These beasts are found with grass hanging out of their mouth. The czars of Russia even had cooked mammoth, mastodon, you know, for their meals. Enjoyed it. Yes?
Well, are you saying that there was not an ice age then, or that whatever was frozen then still is? Or?
Question, are we saying there's no ice age? We'd say no. After the drifting of the continents, glaciers formed. That is clear. But the idea that there was this large cap of ice over all of the continents, number one, was pre the idea of the drifting continents and that there was one landmass. Number two, the evidence does not seem to indicate that at all. Three, it doesn't fit the facts as we see them. So that there really wasn't this ice age that the movies put out. You have to watch movies. I'm going to debating this guy at the end of the month, And in his book, he says, thousands of people who were killed for being witches at Salem. Looked in the Encyclopedia Britannica, at the most, maybe 20 people. Of course, he talked about burning these poor, innocent people. Not a single witch was ever burned in Salem. They hung them. But you see, if you watch a movie, if you watch a movie and it's about Salem witchcraft, what happens to the witches? They're burned at the stake. And how many are there? Hundreds, thousands. That's the movies, and that's what they do with the Ice Age. It's a real quackerobia type of situation. Ooh, one last question.
It's on this evolution. You mentioned that they found fossils of fish at the top of the Himalayas. I was wondering if the canopy theory is correct and that it washed everything down the mountain. How did they find fossils upstream, up on the top?
Oh, the question has to do with, since they have found mollusk and fish fossils up on Mount Everest, if the deluge, if the flood must be understood as including the canopy breaking and the deluge coming down and washing into the oceans, wouldn't that wash away all that? The answer is, number one, we can't be for sure that Mount Everest was Mount Everest, that it was a mountain at that time. With the drifting of the continents, with the plates, there's a lot of mountains that are around today that were once ocean bed and were not a mountain at the time of Noah anyway. Number two, we must remember that the deluge was a washing out and then a coming back in because everything got covered. And you had the fountains of the deep broken up too. So this guy from Chattanooga, he's a professor there, came in with his logarithms, and he'd figured out in a computer that if you go out, here is right now where the United States is. And if you go out here, you have what is called the continental shelf. Well, the continental shelf, clearly, at this point, is where the beach used to be. Well, you've got the amount of water from here to there to explain. And he has figured out that amount of water could be easily explained by the collapsing of a county and the opening up of a deluge, and you would end up with that much more water and would raise the shoreline to where it presently is.
It's really a miracle that the ark ever survived, and if it was that catastrophic, if it went down and it went back up like...
Well, it would be swirling and eddies. It's clear it was absolutely wild because they have... the Lord, of course, would have to protect the ark, but they have evidence of that there were giant whirlpools because you have all these fossils sucked down into one mass. Particularly in the book The Genesis Flood by Whitcomb and Morse, he mentions finding these caches of just every sort of thing that only like a whirlpool suck everything down, all these floating carcasses. And of course, the flood does answer the question, where did the coal beds come from? Where did the oil fields come from? And that would be the organic matter that was floating and being tossed to and fro by the water and then through currents and eddies. You know, you throw something. You notice how the lily pads and the junk, the pollution in a lake will always ultimately collect because of currents and wind. Well, the same thing happened with the body of water on the earth. The junk collected, and we have our coal fields and our oil fields. All right, we'll cut off for now.